Hello, my name's Dave Emery. This is side one of For the Record program number 513, titled Keep Following the Money, being recorded on June 5th of the year 2005. The title of this program is derived from the advice of Deep Throat, whose identity was revealed this past week, that identity being Mark Felt, a former FBI official. Mark Felt told Woodward and Bernstein in the Watergate investigation to, quote, follow the money, unquote. There is no better way of pursuing the extremely complex events in and around the attacks of September 11th than to follow the money. And if this situation is ever to be satisfactorily resolved, and I am not at all optimistic about that, that's what's going to have to happen. People are going to have to keep following the money. And as far as the so-called 911 truth movement, a misnomer if ever there was one, they haven't paid any attention to it. And we'll deal with that element sometime in the future. This past week, there were some major developments, one in particular, vis-a-vis the September 11th money trail. One of the things that I've spoken about at great length over the years is the Muslim Brotherhood and its principal financial organization, the Bank al-Taqwa and related institutions. That institution, Bank al-Taqwa, an institution that not only embraces the Muslim Brotherhood, but if one follows the tributaries out from that, it overlaps the Bush administration in a significant way. It overlaps the milieu of the P2 Lodge and Italian fascism and Silvio Berlusconi in a big way. It overlaps elements of the royal family of Liechtenstein. It's much more than just the Muslim Brotherhood. But when one examines the Bank al-Taqwa, one comes across the epicenter of not only the institution involved in September 11th, but a principal element of what I refer to as the underground right. Bank al-Taqwa was headed up by Youssef Nada, according to the book Dollars for Terror by Richard LaBeviere, as well as the Asia Times, a former Third Reich intelligence agent. Youssef Nada is the head of Bank al-Taqwa. This past week, the Swiss investigative authorities suspended an investigation into Nada Bank al-Taqwa and Nada's close associate, Ali Galeb Himat. One of the things that should be noted is that, as I've already indicated today and in many past broadcasts, Nada is nothing if not well connected. We're going to summarize some of those connections later on in the program. But first, the following article from the Wall Street Journal of June 2nd of 2005. We find the following article by Ian Johnson titled Swiss Won't Bring Big Terror Finance Case to Trial, and We're Going to Pursue This, and it reads in part, Swiss prosecutors suspended one of the most celebrated investigations into alleged terrorist financing, saying there is insufficient evidence to bring the case to trial. Although the investigation wasn't dropped and the suspects' names weren't cleared, it is a partial vindication for Youssef Nada and Galeb Himat, who were accused by Washington of using Nada Management Organization and their bank al-Taqwa to support al-Qaeda and other terrorist organizations. Shortly after the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks in the U.S., the two men and three of their associates were placed on a terrorist financing list that was adopted by the United Nations, effectively freezing their assets and making it impossible for them to travel. Those restrictions remain in place. Mr. Hamat said in a phone interview that prosecutors, quote, have seen there is nothing at all. Now we have to keep struggling to clear our names for our children's sake, unquote. Well, there is a great deal here, and we're going to talk about some of the things that surrounded the dismissal, or at least the suspension of the investigation, but I want to note in passing, by way of simply highlighting some of the profound connections of Youssef Nada and Ali Galeb Himat, the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood, Youssef Nada and Mr. Hamat between them sired five children in the United States between 1979 and 1984. They were residing in suburban Washington, D.C. when they sired those five children between them. Bear in mind, they are fundamentalist Muslims. They have more than one wife. They were almost certainly in the United States as part of the Afghan Mujahideen support effort during the Afghan-Soviet War. The MAK, the Afghan Mujahideen organization was an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood, as is Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and other groups, some of which we're going to talk about today. But again, it is indicative of some of the powerful connections and some of the tangled past of Youssef Nader and Ali Ghaleb Himat that they are able to say that now we have to keep struggling to clear our names for our children's sake. Five of the kids of Nader and Ali Ghaleb Himat, born right here in the land of the free, the home of the brave, the United States of America, between 1979 and 1984, and thereby hangs a tale. Continuing with this story from the Journal of June 2nd, 05. Swiss prosecutors who led the international investigation said the decision isn't a defeat. Prosecutor spokesman Hans-Jürg Mark Weidmer said the charges weren't dropped because, quote, there are very serious doubts in our office about the people being investigated, but there was not enough to bring them to trial, unquote. Mr. Weidmer said financial authorities in the Bahamas, where Bank Al-Taqwa was registered, refused to answer numerous requests for help. In addition, the bank's books were stashed at an undisclosed private address in Saudi Arabia, he said, and without them, prosecutors were stymied. He said Messrs. Nader and Himat weren't obliged to hand over the books. Quote, this was the essential gap in the chain of evidence, unquote, Mr. Weidmer said. Officials in the Bahamas Attorney General's office didn't return phone calls requesting comment. So the Bahamas authorities did not cooperate with the investigation. One of the major industries in the Bahamas is dirty money laundering. The Saudis, surprise, surprise, didn't cooperate with the investigation. As I indicated, Nader and company have more connections than a switchboard, as I like to say. One of the factors that just might have led to the suspension of the investigation is the fact that Youssef Nader's attorney, Perfedici Barchi, is a law partner of the Swiss equivalent of attorney general. I believe they call it their justice minister or minister of justice. Anyway, that woman is Carla Del Ponte. She's a law partner of Nader's attorney, Perfedici Barchi. I would not altogether dismiss the possibility that that might have affected the investigation as well. Interestingly enough, too, Perfedici Barchi, as we've discussed in numerous broadcasts, is also the attorney who handled the Swiss investments for none other than Silvio Berlusconi, the Italian prime minister and a former member of the P2 Lodge. On March 20th, 2002, the largest terrorist funding bust in history took place. It took place in suburban Washington, D.C., mostly in Virginia, somewhat in Maryland. And that investigation unearthed the SAR network and the related SAFA trust. This particular milieu that was busted on March 20th, 2002, appeared to have been not only financing Al-Qaeda, but Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad as well. And when one begins investigating the institutions and individuals targeted on the all-important March 20th, 2002 raids, one comes across numerous overlaps with the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, numerous overlaps with people strongly connected to not only the Bush administration, but the younger George Bush's business affairs, as well as the elder George Bush's business affairs. Also people connected to people like Grover Norquist, Karl Rove, and some of the leading lights in the Republican far right. So, again, not a many, 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 many connections. Saudi Arabia, Italian power politics, Italian fascism, the Bush administration, the Bahamas, and Youssef Nader's attorney, Perfedici Barchi, is a law partner of the Swiss justice minister. That are the sorts of things, as that old song says, nice work if you can get it, and you can get it if you try. Well, Nader got it, and he tried pretty hard. Now, we're going to take a look at another factor concerning the dismissal of charges. Again, well, I shouldn't say, excuse me, that's incorrect. Not the dismissal of charges, but the suspension of the investigation into Youssef Nader. Bear in mind that the Bahamas authorities and the Saudis did not properly cooperate. One of the things that apparently led to this was the fact that there was a huge, huge, huge trove of documents that were obtained, filling several rooms. Those Those documents are in Arabic, and they have not as yet been adequately translated. Yet another element of blowback from the dumbing down and the gutting of American education. We could certainly use people who speak fluent Arabic, and yet we do not have enough. But that was one of the things that led to the suspension of the investigation, because to date, there simply is not the they have not got all of the requisite documents translated. We're going to take a look at an article from MSNBC.com. This is a Newsweek online article by Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball. This from June 3rd of 2005, talking about the suspension of charges against Youssef Nada and Ali Ghaleb Hemat and Bank Al-Taqwa. We read, skipping down, Washington appears to have made extensive efforts to provide Swiss investigators with U.S. government information about the alleged terrorist connections of Nada and Al-Taqwa. Note the following. In a February 4, 2002 letter to Swiss authorities, George Wolf, U.S. Treasury Deputy General Counsel, said that U.S. government information indicated that Al-Taqwa had, quote, long been thought to be involved in financing radical groups, unquote, like Hamas and several North African Islamist factions. According to the letter, as of, quote, late September 2001, unquote, after 9-1-1, again quoting, Bin Laden and his al-Qaeda organization received financial assistance, unquote, from Nada and a now-deceased Saudi associate, Ali bin Musalim. Note that, a now-deceased Saudi associate, Ali bin Musalim. Mr. bin Musalim was a very important individual, and we're going to take a look at just how he came to be deceased and when. Continuing, the letter claimed that since the 1980s, Nada and Musalim, quote, following the pullout of the Soviet army from Afghanistan, had been providing direct investment services for al-Qaeda, investing funds for bin Laden, and making cash deliveries on request to the al-Qaeda organization, unquote. According to the letter, as of October 2000, Bank Al-Taqwa, a Nada entity with an offshore banking license from the government of the Bahamas, quote, appeared to be providing a clandestine line of credit for a close associate of Osama bin Laden. This bin Laden lieutenant had a line of credit with a Middle East financial institution that drew on an identical account number at Bank Al-Taqwa, unquote. The letter also noted that Nada had, quote, personal ties, unquote, with Saddam Hussein, and that one of his fellow Al-Taqwa directors, retired Swiss journalist Ahmed Huber, had, quote, extreme anti-Israel views, unquote, had admitted meeting bin Laden followers in Beirut, and had defended the 9-1-1 attackers. Well, Ahmed Huber, too, is a very interesting individual. He, too, is a protege of the Grand Mufti, Haji Amin al-Husseini. Youssef Nada helped the Grand Mufti escape from Germany at the end of World War II. The Grand Mufti of Jerusalem held the rank of major in the SS. He also recruited three Balkan Muslim Waffen SS divisions to fight on behalf of the Third Reich. He then became the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. Yasser Arafat is his nephew. And Ahmed Huber was one of his protégés. He also was a protégé, that is to say, Ahmed Huber was a protégé of Johann von Leers, Adolf Hitler's chief of anti-Semitic propaganda for the Goebbels propaganda ministry. Von Leers, after fleeing to Argentina after World War II, then moved to Egypt, set up shop there, converted to Islam, changed his name to Omar Amin von Leers, and became the head of the Institute for the Study of Zionism, unquote, in Egypt. And interestingly enough, Ahmed Huber also has strong links with the pagan occult right in Europe. He has strong links with American neo-Nazis, including elements of the National Alliance. He has very, very strong links with German neo-Nazis, such as the NPD, a party that now has parliamentary representatives in some of the state parliaments in Germany. So Ahmed Huber is a very, very interesting individual as well. Note again, this letter that was written by George Wolf and that identified a now-deceased Saudi associate, Ali bin Musalim, as one of the connecting links between al-Qaeda and al-Taqwa. We're going to hear more about Mr. Bin Musa Lim and the circumstances surrounding his death and the timing in particular. And we're also going to take a look at a very, very interesting thing. Apparently, according to an article we're about to read, Mr. Bin Musa Lim was involved with unnamed people in the United States involved with trying to corner the silver market in the early 1980s. That suggests the distinct possibility that he may have been cooperating with the ultra-right-wing Hunt family, specifically Nelson Bunker Hunt, one of the primary financiers of the World Anti-Communist League, a linchpin of the American far-right, one of the primary members of the right-wing Texas oil family, the Hunts. They were trying to corner the silver market. They were working with the Saudis, as we're going to touch on. And this, I think, suggests the distinct possibility that Mr. Bin Musa Lim may have been working as part of the same operation as the Hunts. I have not been able to confirm this. This is what I like to call food for thought and grounds for further research, but it sure is food for thought, and it most definitely is grounds for further research. We're going to take a look at the following. This is an article that was in, this was published in the Financial Times of London of April 27th of 2005. The article is by Stephen Fiedler, F-I-D-L-E-R. Its headline, Swiss-based Al-Qaeda suspect had Saudi passport. This alludes to Mr. Bin Musa Lim. A Swiss-based businessman accused by the U.S. Treasury of providing financial help to Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda carried a Saudi diplomatic passport, according to copies of documents contained in a book published on Thursday in Paris. The documents include a letter from the U.S. Treasury to the Swiss authorities, which says that al-Qaeda and its leader received financial assistance from the businessman Ali bin Musa Lim, quote, as of late September of 2001, unquote. They also include a copy of Mr. Bin Musa Lim's diplomatic passport. The disclosures contained in Al-Qaeda Will Conquer, Al-Qaeda Vaincra, by the author Guillaume Dasquier, will be uncomfortable reading for the Saudi government, which has disputed any suggestions of official complicity in the attacks of September 11, 2001. Parenthetically, Monsieur Dasquier is the co-author, along with Jean-Charles Brizard, of the book Forbidden Truth. It's quite well known. Continuing. Now, the next section here alludes to the letter from George Wolfe, the January 2002 letter from George Wolfe about Mr. Bin Musa Lim. We just heard about that in the Newsweek article. The January 2002 letter from George Wolfe, then the U.S. Treasury's Deputy General Counsel, says Mr. Bin Musa Lim, quote, has been providing indirect investment services for al-Qaeda, investing funds for bin Laden, and making cash deliveries on request to the al-Qaeda organization, unquote. The letter links him to the now-defunct Bank Al-Taqwa and its founder, Youssef Nada. Both have been named by the U.S. and United Nations as providers of terrorist finance. The existence of the letter has been previously reported by some news organizations, but Mr. Bin Musa Lim's diplomatic status was not emphasized. According to the book, Mr. Bin Musa Lim was found dead in his residence in Lausanne last June, parenthetically June of 2004, a month after reports of the U.S. Treasury letter first emerged. So the reports of the letter emerge a month later. Mr. Bin Musa Lim leaves the ranks of the living under circumstances not explained adequately in anything that I can I have seen. Again, so as so often happens with some of these very, very significant investigations, when there is an individual whose activities could link some very, very evil deeds with some very, very powerful people, that person suddenly goes into the ranks of the recently deceased. A pattern numbingly familiar at this point, but we should note the demise of Mr. Bin Musa Lim in Lausanne, Switzerland, a month after the letter became public. That certainly may have had something to do with the failure of the Swiss authorities to pursue the investigation. The fact that the Nada milieu also overlaps the GOP's ethnic outreach organization, something that, in my opinion, necessitated the deep sixing of Operation Green Quest in this country, something that we've talked about in the past. And the fact, again, as I've said a couple of times, the fact that Nada's attorney is a law partner of the Swiss justice minister may have had something to do with it too. Skipping down here, now note the following, because this is very, very interesting and it may be terribly significant. Mr. Bin Musa Lim's role in controversial financial dealings goes back to the early 1980s when U.S. prosecutors accused him and others of attempts to corner the silver market. That's very, very interesting here, because in this time period, the aforementioned Nelson Bunker Hunt, one of the primary operatives of the very powerful Texas Hunt family, far right wingers, independent oil operators at one point among the richer families on earth, Nelson Bunker Hunt was working to corner the silver market in the early 1980s as well. Nelson Bunker Hunt, a primary financier of the World Anti-Communist League, primary financial backer of the Contras in the 1980s, and as documented in, among other sources, the book The Kingdom, Arabia and the House of Saud by Robert Lacey, one of the groups with which Nelson Bunker Hunt was working in his attempt to corner the silver market was the Saudis. And since Mr. Bin Musa Lim held a Saudi passport, and since, according to this article, he appears to have been involved in cornering the silver market or attempting to do so, I think the possibility that Mr. Bin Musa Lim may have been working with the Hunts is a very intriguing one that certainly needs to be investigated. Because if that's the case, this would put Mr. Bin Musa Lim in a milieu, my favorite word, a milieu that involves some of the American far right as well. Again, something which at this point is fairly well documented, that is to say, links between Islamists, or as I call them, Islamofascists, and the American far right. Another interesting detail about Youssef Nada, this is from the blog of Douglas Farah, a very fine investigative reporter for the Washington Post, and the author of the book Blood from Stones, The Secret Financial Network of Terror that we've accessed in the past. That book has sadly been eclipsed. In Douglas Farah's blog of Wednesday, June 1st of 2005, there's an article about the suspension of the investigation into Nada and Al-Taqwa. It's called A Serious Setback for Terror Finance Prosecutions, and it reads in part as follows, skipping down. Nada, a cousin of Yasser Arafat and friend of Saddam Hussein, proudly identifies himself as the Brotherhood's foreign minister. This is most interesting. I did not know that Nada was a cousin of Yasser Arafat. As we've looked at in For the Record 416, among others, Youssef Nada had, according to the Asia Times, helped to effect the escape of Haj Amin al-Husseini, the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, from Germany at the end of World War II. The Grand Mufti then set up shop in Palestine. Yasser Arafat is a nephew of the Grand Mufti, and Nada is a cousin of Arafat. That makes Nada a relative of the Grand Mufti himself. So it is all one very big, if not altogether, happy family under the circumstances. We're going to take a look now at another interesting story. This, again, by the aforementioned Michael Isikoff and Mark Hosenball, who write for MSNBC.com and Newsweek. This article is from November 24th of 2004. It's called The End of the Muslim Brotherhood? An Arabic newspaper is reporting that the fundamentalist group might disband, but its dissolution could make it harder for governments to act against financiers of terror. One of the things that's important about this article, it notes the clandestine nature of the Muslim Brotherhood. It notes its altogether flexible nature. I would note that the Muslim Brotherhood at this point is not only still in many ways very much above ground, but it may very well come to power in the, quote, democratic, unquote, processes underway in places like Iraq and Egypt. In that regard, I think it would be very similar to Licio Gelli's his strategy of the democratic revival of fascism. Gelli, the Grand Master of the aforementioned P2 Lodge, had envisioned fascism returning to power in Italy and other places through the democratic process. If that sounds like caca to some people, I would note that the current Italian foreign minister is none other than Gianfranco Fini, head of the Italian fascist party, the Alleanza Nazionale, and there are strong links between the Alleanza Nazionale and its milieu and the bank Al-Taqwa. Again, this article, The End of the Muslim Brotherhood, by Isikoff and Mark Hosenball. On the face of it, a little notice report in a London-based Arabic-language newspaper last week seemed to signal a major victory in the Bush administration's international campaign to crack down on alleged financiers of Islamic terrorism. According to the November 11th edition of Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, the Muslim Brotherhood organization, an international fundamentalist movement that spawned many of the world's key Islamic extremist and terrorist groups, including Al-Qaeda, recently held a secret conference at which its leaders discussed whether to dissolve their organization in the wake of Washington's moves to crack down on some of its leading members and corporate organizations. My guess is they ain't going to be doing that anytime soon, particularly after the suspension of the investigation into NADA. But we're going to continue with this investigation in the other side. One of the things this article notes is that even if they formally disband, what they will all probability do is simply go underground, become more diffuse, and less easy to investigate. There are a great many resources that I've made available in conjunction with others for people to pursue. If some of the names that I'm talking about, like Yousef Nada, Bank al-Taqwa, Haj Amin al-Husseini, and others, sound unfamiliar to people, and that would certainly be the case for some people, at least particularly newer listeners, I can't stress strongly enough for newer listeners and more veteran listeners, please, please, please use the resources I've made available on the Internet. First of all, Spitfire, the CD duplication service that stocks all of the various programs and lectures I've done over the years. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005. You can reach them by email at spitfirelist@hotmail.com. Spitfirelist is one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E-L-I-S-T. Do note the Spitfire website, www.spitfirelist.com. There is a wealth of information available on the Spitfire website. There are long written article-length descriptions of the various For the Record programs featuring most of the text that I use in these broadcasts. It's available for free for fair use. Do take advantage of those For the Record descriptions. I'm about a month behind in getting those done. I hope to get caught up at some point. But nonetheless, there is a growing wealth of printed information available for free in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. There are descriptions of other programs and lectures available as well. The Spitfire website is equipped with a search function, so you can search the Spitfire website. It also features a link to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that feature the declassified government documents that document the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II. And in conjunction with that, there is also the landmark text, the pivotally important suppressed text, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late heroic Paul Manning. That's available for download for free in both HTML and Adobe PDF. So please take advantage of that book. Paul Manning was a member of Murrow's Boys, broadcast the surrender of both Japan and Germany on the CBS radio network, trained as a combat gunner on both B-17s and B-29s to fly combat missions over both Germany and Japan in World War II so that he could cover those as a journalist. They don't make them like that anymore. And Paul Manning basically sacrificed his post-war career in order to bring that story to us. It's available for free. There are also links to a couple of websites maintained by sister station WFMU-FM, the heroic WFMU, right across the river in Jersey City from where the World Trade Center used to be. www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery features all the more recent For the Record programs available for download for free on both real audio and, in many cases now, MP3. Spitfire, by the way, also features the most recent several For the Record shows available in both real audio and MP3 as well. WFMU also has all of the older For the Record shows available for download only on a linked website, linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the Spitfire website as well. WFMU is now podcasting the For the Record shows. And also note, I will have the details for you. There is a listener who is turning all of the For the Record descriptions into a blog as well. So the For the Record programs are getting blogged, and WFMU is podcasting the For the Record shows as well. So if you've got an iPod, just click at the link at the top of each For the Record description. There's a link to the podcasting website, a link to the For the Record search function website on the Spitfire website, links to both of the download websites for WFMU, links to the Martin Bormann Nazi in Exile websites. Please take advantage of this. And also note that there's a page to click on the Spitfire website for people who would like to assist the work that I'm doing. And if you don't like what you see, there's no better way of doing something about it than to assist the work that I'm doing. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record Program number 513. Keep Following the Money, being recorded on June 5th of 2005. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.